The date is July 3rd, 1991, and we're watching Terminator 2, Judgment Day. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the doppelganger twin at the vending machine to my doppelganger twin at the vending machine.
Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
I don't know why I went with that. I didn't write anything down, and I'm like, I was put on the spot, and I'm like, let's just go with the twins, because twins abound in this movie. Apparently, not only is that done with old school special effects of having just two twins standing face to face, but some of the scenes with two Linda Hamiltons is also Linda Hamilton's twin sister Leslie.
I didn't even know she had a twin.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
They just kept it secret all these years.
They sure did, yeah. So this week we're looking back at July 1991 when the movies and theaters were Naked Gun 2.5, Dying Young, Episode 59 subject The Rocketeer, Episode 45 subject Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. Boy, we've dipped into 1991 an awful lot. And of course, our movie for today, Terminator 2 Judgment Day, which earned $522.88 million on a $102 million budget.
And while we promise not to kill you, we will be blowing your kneecaps out with spoilers. So if you don't want this movie to be spoiled for you, then please hit pause, go watch it, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
So I have found many, many, many taglines for the poster of this movie. The first one, Get Terminated, July 3rd.
Straight and to the point.
That's right. Number two, Hasta la vista, baby.
Yeah.
Yep. Number three, It's Nothing Personal.
Okay.
All very brief, yes. Number four, This Time There Are Two.
Still not the one I've expected.
Number five, The Battle for Tomorrow Has Begun,
Still not there.
Number six, oh, we're going up to 11 on this one. Number six, same make, same model, new mission.
Okay.
I'm hoping the one you're looking for is my personal favorite, which I left till number 11, by the way. Number seven, remember the action, remember the danger, remember the emotion, remember the mission. But if you think you've seen it all, look again.
That's
the one you thought it was going to be. That's the one you thought it was going to be. Number eight, if you thought you had seen it all, look again. So just, you know, a portion of that last very lengthy one. Number nine, This Time He's Back for Good. Clever double meaning. You got to look at that, right? You know,
fine.
He's there for good and for good. No? Yeah. Okay. This one, number 10, only found on the German DVD, by the way. He is back from the future, Arnold Schwarzenegger as the Terminator.
Okay.
Number 11, this is the one that you're probably waiting for. Only found on the Dutch DVD, by the way. Not even a mainstream tagline. He said, I'll be back. He was right.
I mean, that's close. I just think the tagline should have been, he's back.
He's back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Straight yeah. to the point. Everybody gets it.
Yeah. I do like the idea of he said, I'll be back. He is. Yeah. He was right. Yeah. So, but yeah, you're right. He's back is the obvious tagline. I guess low-hanging fruit for James Cameron.
Sure.
And really, not much to say. We remember the action. We remember the danger. We remember the emotion. We remember the mission. Or do we? Let's go to a 60-second synopsis.
In the year 2029, John Connor continues the fight against the sentient technovirus Skynet, which seeks to eradicate humanity. Once more, Skynet sends back a lethal robotic killing machine to kill a young John Connor before he can become Earth's savior. This time, however, Skynet decides to send the T-1000, a liquid metal robot capable of altering its form to suit its needs, back to 1995 to kill a teenage John. This time, the Resistance decides to fight fire with fire, and instead of sending back another human soldier, they send a refurbished T-800 to stop the 1000 and save John. In 1995, John is rebelling against his foster parents while his mother, Sarah, is locked up in an insane asylum, until one day the T-1000 shows up dressed as a cop and tries to run him over with a semi-truck. The T-8 shows up in the nick of time and saves John, and they go break out Sarah and then head to her base to load up on guns. They figure out that in order to stop Skynet, they need to stop the titular Judgment Day by killing Cyberdyne engineer Miles Dyson before he can crack the code on what will ultimately unleash the virus. Sarah goes on a solo hunt to kill Miles, but ultimately can't take the kill shot. Team Connor fills Miles in about the future he's about to create, and he agrees to help them break into Cyberdyne so they can steal and destroy the chip and arm they somehow acquired from the 1984 T-800. After a showdown with the police ensues, Miles is dead, but John, Sarah, and their friendly neighborhood Terminator escape with the goods. The T-1000 arrives late to the party and chases them again, in another semi-truck, to the only thing guaranteed to destroy a Terminator, an industrial plant of some sort. Fortunately, this plant has a molten metal pit for the 1000 to be pushed/shot into, which he is. For good measure, the 800 also goes for a molten metal bath, and the world and the future is saved. ... Or is it?
Or is it? Right on. Yeah, I mean, Terminator 2. Like, there's really nothing to say about it except that it's Terminator 2. I mean, I loved this movie when it came out. It was groundbreaking in every way. I have a Terminator 2 figurine on my shelf. I have other Terminator 2 swag. I bought the special edition DVD when it came out with a tin cover on it. It's the fucking Terminator. It's cool as shit. It was the greatest thing of 1991. And I mean, I was also a huge fan of Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. But I mean, Terminator is still a step above that. I mean, my history with Terminator is I loved it right from the beginning, and I still love it and all that sort of thing. Yeah. What about you, Colin? What kind of history do you have with Terminator 2 Judgment Day?
I think when we did Terminator, I remember saying that, like, Terminator 2 to me is the entry point, not necessarily because I watched it, but just because I remember all the marketing and action figures and advertising and everybody
crazy,
like,
crazy action figures.
And like everybody just saying like, I knew, I think of Hasta la vista, baby, as the Terminator's catchphrase before I think of I'll be back.
Yeah. Well, what's funny is in the Spanish version, it's sayonara, baby.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that when most people think of the Terminator, what they're actually thinking of is Terminator 2, most likely.
Yeah, most because likely. Because
even the look of him is that I think most people envision in their mind is this Terminator 2, like, spiked up hair, sunglasses look. Yeah. And that's kind of like, even going forward to Terminator 3, like, that's kind of the look he maintains.
Yeah. Yeah, it's something like Evil Dead. When someone says Evil Dead, you think of Evil Dead 2. I don't know if you're familiar with those movies, but that really is how it is. You know, you think of the one where he cuts off his hand and puts a chainsaw on it, or, you know, whatever.
But yeah, I remember in elementary school, like, my mom would have never let me watch this movie, but all my friends, their parents had other ideas.
Yeah, so somehow managed to watch it?
I just remember everybody talking about this movie and just saying it was, like, the most amazing thing ever.
Right on. Well, let's jump into Terminator 2 Judgment Day. I'm thrown off. Isn't Judgment spelled J-U-D-G-E-M-E-N-T? Because the title of the movie has no E. It just goes J-U-D-G. And to me, that doesn't seem right? Or is this a case of being Canadian adds an E, kind of like color would it add a U?
Well, I don't know. The spell check isn't triggered in my note here.
Yeah,
in my 60-second synopsis, and it has the E.
Yeah, and I found that too, but on the poster, it is E-less. E-less, yeah. Well, directed by James Cameron, produced by James Cameron and Van Ling, and written by James Cameron and William Wisher. And so we open the movie with the traffic, and then kids on a swing, and then the bright white light, and then we're thrust forward into Los Angeles 2029, where we see like the bones and the skulls and the destroyed playground equipment. We're in a Terminator movie. I was watching this movie and I made such a big deal about it in our first Terminator episode that my car was from the Terminator. It might be from Terminator 2. I may have spotted it in this opening scene, and I was so excited that I texted you a photo even.
Yes. But I was watching the movie and I was like, where? I'm the scene must go over fast because I couldn't find it.
Yeah, I just happened to see its silhouette. I'm not sure though, right? I don't know. I would think that mine would have scorch marks on it, and it doesn't look like there's scorch marks.
Well, I mean, is it, what kind of, like, isn't it made out of, like, clay?
Oh, is it, plastic. Like,
plastic?
No, yeah, it's, they've taken a model car and basically, like, distressed it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they built a model car and then distressed it, made it rusty and put holes in it and bent it up and shit, yeah.
I completely forgot that we actually get to see John Connor, like the old John Connor in this movie.
Old scarred up John Connor.
And I was like John, I feel like John Connor is such a, I don't know, he seems like he should be an iconic guy, but like, I wonder if this guy puts on his acting resume, like, I was John Connor.
I was the first John the first, Connor.
The very first. I originated the role of John Connor.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I forgot that we saw his face, right? Like, yeah. For some reason, I remember the future scene seeing him, but for some reason, I thought it was always from the back with him with binoculars to his face and stuff. But mm-hmm. Yeah, we do actually see him for a minute. I read that originally they were thinking that they were going to have Michael Biehn, who played Kyle Reese, they were going to have him as the T-1000.
That would have been cool.
So they, you know, like, they mimicked the look of Kyle Reese with the T-1000. They ultimately decided it would be too confusing for audiences, but it's like, that's an intriguing proposition, though.
I think it would have ended up being a different movie, but it would have added a lot of depth to Sarah, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Not like it just that would have just been an interest, and even like the idea of like John getting to see his father,
yeah,
like I don't know, that would have been, I think that would have been really cool. Not that I don't like Robert Patrick, but I think that would have been a cool way to go about it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't really see what people would be confused by.
yeah. Now, I mean, one of the things I realized with this movie as well, watching it on this viewing, is I think the fact that Arnold Schwarzenegger was the good guy in this movie was really supposed to be like a Luke, I am your father type revelation.
Mm-hmm.
I paid particular close attention to the care that James Cameron took with making sure that we don't see what happens to the cop. So we don't know that he was killed. We don't know that he's metamorphosizing robot right off the beginning. We think that he's a nice guy. He's nice to the step parents. He's a friendly guy. You know, meanwhile, Arnold Schwarzenegger still beats someone up to get his shit. Right? So it's...
Yeah.
It is interesting that it's not until they're in the hallway in the mall and he says, get down, that it's like, oh, he's on his side.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that until just now, because they make a real point of, they do tell you, like, that, you know, the Resistance sent back a robot, but they make a point not to tell you, like, which model was sent back by who.
Yup.
And I guess it's one of those things, like, I wonder what it was like in the theater to watch this for the first time, if that would have clicked. Because for me, I don't know, I just remember, but also, I also just felt like in the marketing, from what I remember, like, I always assumed that Arnold Schwarzenegger was the good guy.
Well, see,
just because it was Arnold Schwarzenegger, but
I read something that in the lead-up marketing, they were made sure that they never showed John Connor and Arnold Schwarzenegger together in any of the shots for the trailers.
Yeah, like I remember watching, because I watched this one first, and I remember going, or no, I don't know how, in what order I, oh no, I watched the third one first. That's right.
Okay.
And then I went back and watched the first one and the second one in the right order. But I remember going back and watching the first one and being shocked that Arnold was the bad guy.
Yeah.
Like, I just never, it's kind of like The Rock. Like, he's taking this role now, and where it's like, he just cannot be the bad, like, if he's the bad guy, it's weird.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, that's what Arnold Schwarzenegger said after this, or, you know, or with Terminator, is that, no, he's not going to be the bad guy again. That's why he's the good guy in this one. Mm-hmm. And then he went on to be Mr. Freeze, though. But
yeah. Well, and look how that turned out.
That's right. No one wants Arnold Schwarzenegger as a bad guy.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. The opening, I realized, was very cool. I forgot just how much future stuff we actually do end up seeing. And just with the fact that we have watched Terminator 1 so recently, it's like, ooh, it's a step up. It's definitely a step up. And I was particularly taken by the care that they take with the T-800 exoskeletons that you see walking around, making sure that they move kind of like Arnold Schwarzenegger, or vice versa, that Arnold Schwarzenegger has made himself make sure that he moves like these things. But it's like, yeah, you kind of look at it and go, it kind of looks like Arnie. Kind of looks like him.
I always think that about these futuristic scenes in Terminator. It's like, but I always wanted to see, I always kind of wish that I could see the war. Like, yeah. I always wish I could have, there would have been, like, a movie that was just more focused on, like, John Connor.
Well, and that's the war. Christian Bale one, though.
Yeah, but not really, because it's still kind of like him. Like, he's not there yet. Like, he's still not, like, the big, from what I remember, anyways. He's not, I don't know, he's not this guy. Yeah. Like, this guy looks like he's out to, he knows what he's doing. Like, I don't know.
He's got face scars.
Yeah, he's got face scars. He's like Nick Fury.
Yeah, that's right. He's seen some shit. Or a cat. I don't know.
Or a cat. Or, yeah, a big cat. Fought a lynx.
Oh, boy. I still love the intros of the Terminators coming to the town. Or at least the one where it's Arnold Schwarzenegger. I love his intro with the way that it burns away the semi-trucks. And, I mean, this is what you were talking about with the first one, that I remember an orb. And here we go. We finally get the orb.
Yeah.
The special effects have definitely taken a big step up. But you have to sit there and go, oh, my God, 1991. Holy shit. Like, they're wonky compared to some of the things that I've seen now. You can tell.
But, I mean, you gotta give it to, like, like James Cameron. Mm-hmm. That guy is just, he's on the cutting edge.
Oh, always. The man is crazy. Like, just with I've seen some of his submarine documentaries, like, just the amount that he's willing to put his life on the line. And this movie is no exception, because the helicopter chase through the traffic, where the helicopter is flying dangerously low underneath, like, overpasses and stuff, none of the camera guys were willing to either film from inside the helicopter or from the truck. They did two shots, and James Cameron himself filmed from inside the helicopter and from the back of the truck because he's like, fuck it. Well, I want that shot. And so those shots were filmed by James Cameron because he's willing to put his life on the line.
That first like chase scene is incredible. Even the like whoever the stunt guy is on the motorcycle that takes that drop was like that is far.
Yeah.
That's a man. I was just like,
wearing his Arnold Schwarzenegger mask. But I guess they have him on some sort of hoist that that cuts his weight in half or even lighter, so that he's not landing full on with the motorcycle. And they've erased
the helicopter was crazy though too, because there's one part I remember specifically where, because at first I was like, how are they doing this? Because it's so low, and there's the one part where it has to, like, go up and over this overpass, like, pretty quick. And it's, like it looks like a, I don't know, like, almost like a military-style, like, precision helicopter move. It was cool.
Yeah. Well, the guy that's flying the helicopter is the same guy that gets kicked out of the cockpit by the T-1000 at that one point. The get-out guy, and he has to jump out of the helicopter. Yeah, that's the guy that's also flying in those scenes. Like, he's a stunt helicopter pilot, so he did a fall and a jump out of a helicopter. And so James Cameron was nice enough to, like, throw him a line so that he could get a credit in the movie, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
I mean, the one chase scene definitely deserves it.
Yeah. One of the effects that I, for whatever reason, like, I didn't like as much as I have in the past is... I don't know, maybe I'm just older and, like, thinking about it logically, but, like, the T-1000's, like, liquid metal body, like, the way that, like, he gets shot and he gets blown up and, like, but you can still see, like, all the impact points, like, they just stay on his shirt and don't immediately just
seem
meld.
Like tinfoil cups glued to his shirt is what they feel like,
yeah,
right?
Those I felt didn't hold up as well as I would have liked.
Yeah, yeah. But some of the scenes where they're, like, manipulating around, like the fight scene toward the end where, he punches him through the stomach and then he manipulates around and all of a sudden it's him holding the hand. It's like, oh, okay. They definitely did some cool stuff with it, though. When they did it right, they did it right. But, yeah, I agree about the... That's what I always think that they look like is just, like, tinfoil cups that are, they're like, hurry up, we need everybody to eat the tarts on set so that we have all the little foil cups to use for the impact marks.
Yeah. are we at Sarah?
I thought it can be.
Okay.
Why not? Huh.
I was very impressed by Linda Hamilton's physique.
Yes.
Like, she's jacked.
She's
jacked. For a woman in the 1990s, she is ripped.
Yeah, yeah. She's more than Marvel ripped.
Yeah,
like the Marvel women are not this ripped. They always say they are, and it's like no. Gotta go look at Linda Hamilton in Terminator 2, doing chin ups on her overturned bed. Fuck.
Well, I have a note here that I forgot when Arnold. After he, like, beats up all the guys in the biker bar or whatever, and he's going to steal the bike, and that old guy pulls a gun on him, and he takes his glasses. Mm-hmm. I think they play Bad to the Bone, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
but,
they do. Yeah.
But I couldn't help but feel like it was a missed opportunity to play Sunglasses at Night.
Oh, yes. That's right. Riding away on his Harley with some Corey Hart playing over top. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I would have liked.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't let you take a man's wheels, boy. Yeah. No, you can, like, beat up everyone in the bar, but no, you're not going with that motorcycle. Ain't going nowhere with that boy.
Yeah.
I love how the Terminator in that scene basically levels up like a video game character. You know, he walks in bare-ass naked. Beats up a bunch of guys. He walks out with two guns, a full outfit, a motorcycle, and some sunglasses. I mean, pretty good haul for the naked man walking into the bar.
Yeah, it's a probably had some sort of cheat code, I guess, in the form of just ultimate strength and invulnerability.
Yeah, some of that stuff.
In the asylum, later on, when I don't know, pretending like she's like being drugged, and that security guard comes in,
licks
her face, is probably one of the most disgusting things I've ever seen on TV.
Yeah, yeah, that's one of those where you stand up and cheer when she beats the shit out of him.
When she beats the shit out of him, yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah, I don't know whether their asylum practices are regulated very well. I'm wondering how much abuse she's taken is kind of what I'm thinking, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He's got the same, like, molesty look even in the flashback videos that they show her. Like, he's just...
Yeah. So I guess those guys were students, but I also thought it was weird that This dude's just like taking people around like it's a zoo. Like, oh, and here we have our, you know, psychotic woman who thinks her son is going to be the savior of the future, and here's somebody who thinks they're a bird. And
yeah, that moment of them all looking through the glass is just like, oh, there's something chilling about that, where it's like, yeah, you're on display. Like, how does it feel from her side? Especially since he, like, cuts off the sound.
Mm-hmm.
And so now suddenly it's like, oh, fuck, now what's he saying? I like that they brought that doctor back from the first one, though. I do like that continuity.
Oh, I didn't even notice.
Yeah.
Is he the one?
He's the one that assesses her at the police station or whatever.
Ah. Yeah, I didn't even pick up on that.
Yeah, Dr. Silberman. The character, the Miles Dyson character that they have in this movie, apparently they offered it to Denzel Washington. Or sorry, I guess Denzel Washington.
Denzel?
His name is actually pronounced Denzel.
Oh, okay.
Yes. And he says that himself. His name is Denzel Washington, but his father is Denzel Washington. And so in the house, to keep them straight, his mom always called him Denzel, but he's named after his father, who is Denzel. I watched a whole interview with him. But either way, he said all the guy does is, like, sweat and cry. And he's like, no, that's fine. I'm good. I guess back in 1991, Denzel Washington was feeling too big for Terminator.
Man,
I don't know.
Whatever came of that guy, right?
Yeah, I know. Feels like he can go throwing rolls away. Jeez. Yeah. And then he was never heard from again.
Yeah. I was trying to, did Edward Furlong do anything? Was he in anything else big other than this movie? This is like his first movie ever.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. And no, like, he did some, like, straight to video sequel for something. Like Lost Boys or something like that.
I feel like he was in a Crow. Like one of those, like, weird
that
Crow
might have been what
straight
it was.
To DVD movies or something like that.
Yeah. It might have been something like that. Yeah, I mean, I was always disappointed that they never asked him to reprise the John Connor role.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe they did. I was always disappointed that he never did.
Yeah.
That's when they started going through the phase of the Terminator movies where they started recasting Sarahs and Johns and everything like that. It's like, at least they brought them back for the one or for the last one.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just kind of what, like, because I thought he actually did a decent job in this movie. Like, he seemed like he was a pretty good actor, like for a child actor. I thought he did really well.
Yeah. And what's funny is kind of like our friend Will that we've had on the show, where we have him on for one podcast and then, like, 3 months later have him on again, and all of a sudden he sounds completely different. Apparently Edward Furlong hit a growth spurt. This was a long enough shoot that they had that he actually grew a few inches during the course of this movie, and his voice got deeper. So the only voice where it's like actually from the movie is where they're talking about why humans cry.
Oh.
Because he has a higher voice, so he sounds more innocent. But everything else later on is his voice is a little bit deeper and squeakier because a lot of that was done ADR at the end.
Yeah, and this movie takes like, or it's 1996 in the movie. It's not 91. Like, he's supposed to be, he reads to me on screen as being like 13 or 14.
Yeah.
But he's supposed to be like 10, like 9 or 10 years old.
Yeah.
So that kind of threw me off a little bit, but.
Yeah, I think that especially since I have a 10-year-old, and it's like, no, nope, that's not my 10-year-old.
Yeah.
Of course, my 10-year-old doesn't have that bitch foster mom taking care of her. Fuck.
Yeah, it was hard to know. I don't know, the foster parents I felt were played like almost too real sometimes.
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh, like that dad, he was like, what,
he's just what worn does he out.
Say? Yeah, like he's just there, just wants to watch TV. Yeah. And he's just going to do his duty because his wife said so.
Yeah. Yeah. Fuck. Yeah. Just, geez. Give your foster parents a break, man. Like they've taken you in. They've let a 10-year-old have a motorbike. I mean, they seem cool. I remember it was Terminator 2 that got me into Guns N' Roses. Yeah, because they definitely like blaring the Guns N' Roses soundtrack in this. It was the Use Your Illusion albums were the first Guns N' Roses I ever owned because of the songs from this movie.
It's got a decent soundtrack.
Yeah.
Got a nice rock soundtrack. I was just reading here. Apparently, Furlong was supposed to play John Connor again in Terminator 3.
Okay.
Or he was removed because the producers discovered he was dealing with like a really bad drug addiction.
Oh, okay. Well,
I think we have Edward Furlong to blame for what became of the Terminator franchise.
That sounds about right. Yeah, I also read that Billy Idol was going to play the T-1000, but he ended up in like a motorcycle accident and was unable.
We're both idiots. Edward Furlong was in American History X.
Oh shit! Yes. Yes, and he was pretty amazing in that movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so okay, yeah,
he did have at least one other.
He like, had one really good movie.
Significant role.
There was some really shitty ones too, though.
Yeah, there was.
But... Yeah. Man, the all the mall stuff. Oh boy, I just sit there and I'm like, so 1991 in that arcade and everything. It's so amazing. But I love that whole scene, that whole action scene where it's everyone stalking and the fight in the back of the mall and everything. My favorite moment is, you know, of course he's got the flower box going, but when he comes bursting through the door and pulls the thing out of the flower box, and there's the guy in the hallway holding a Pepsi can. And then Arnold Schwarzenegger comes into the hallway with his shotgun, Pepsi machine glowing behind him, you know, providing a halo around him. God, I love that in your face advertising. And you know
says,
what?
And Arnold Schwarzenegger says, get down. It's time for Sponsorship Corner.
Time for Sponsorship Corner. I will say, though, as far as hallway scenes go, I do, you know, you need a good hallway scene, and it is legitimately a fun moment back there where the big reveal of him being a good guy.
Yeah, I would have never actually thought about that until you mentioned it.
Yeah.
But that is a cool thing.
Yeah.
It's one of those things I wish I would have been able to experience with like fresh eyes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Virgin eyes, as it were.
Yeah. Yeah. Like a guest.
Yeah, like a guest who shall not be named.
So always on the lookout for product placements in movies. This week, Terminator 2 Judgment Day is brought to you by Pepsi-Cola, Suzuki, Mitsubishi, Ford, Freightliner, and Harley-Davidson vehicles, Dunkin' Donuts, Miller Lite and Budweiser beers, Pentax cameras, Atari, Mobil Gas, Lady Lee low-fat milk, Subway sandwiches, and Oshkosh Bagosh, plus... And I was surprised to find out that these were real. Liquid Rooter Cryoco is actually real. And same with CSI Steel, which is California Steel Incorporated. Those are all real, or, well, probably real, I should say. Plus the fictional Cactus Jack's Market, Bull El Gold Gardening, and, of course, Cyberdyne Systems. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. I will say that with this movie, I think the exposition dumps are done fairly well. Like, they definitely have a good number of exposition dumps, but I still think ultimately they make them entertaining.
Yeah, I think they do. Like, I don't know. I would agree. I think they do them well. It's never... The one thing I felt about this movie was it never feels like... I'm trying to think of another... We've watched a few movies where it's like things are going at a good rate, mm-hmm. and then it's like, oh, pause for exposition, and then like we get all this. Whereas I felt like this movie, it's like when the exposition happens, it's part of the scene. It's not just like, oh, we just needed to take a break and explain everything. Like it doesn't slow the pacing of the movie, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, I think this movie is very well paced because, like, even when I look at my notes itself, it's like, okay, you know, now we're here doing the motorcycle thing. Now we're here with the creepy orderly licking Sarah. Now we're here with the, you know, her shooting the guy in the knee. Or, sorry, with the Terminator. Like, they're bouncing back and forth between we gotta rescue Mom and then we see what Mom's doing, but meanwhile we see what the T-1000's doing. Like, the story is pretty well paced and spread out in that respect. There's always that moment of, oh, no, remember, this guy is also on the hunt, too. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. Yeah, I find it does. It bounces around, but it's well paced because it does that.
Yeah, like, once they break Sarah out, I was kind of surprised at how long it takes for us to see the T-1000 again.
Mm-hmm.
I remembered him being more of a constant throughout the entire movie, but they kind of take a break from him to go through and explain the whole Judgment Day thing and like who we need to find, who we need to stop, and where we need to go and when. But they do a good job of like having Arnold just be like, oh, well, my other, like the other one who was sent with, like, he has all the same information as me, like, you know, he'll be tracking us, or he might think to go there as well, and that kind of stuff. Like,
yeah.
they keep him still at the forefront of your mind, like, oh, this motherfucker could show up at any mm-hmm. moment.
That's true, yeah. We don't know where he's lurking because he can pose as anybody.
Mm-hmm.
He could be you right now.
Yeah, like, I also kind of felt, I wish they would have used a little bit more of him doing that. Like, they show him become the foster mom, which I thought was a pretty epic kill with the knife through the milk through the mouth.
Yeah.
That was pretty sweet.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome.
But I think it would have been cool to have him just kind of like be more chameleon-esque and just show up where you least expect it.
Yeah.
Like, because you would think a robot like that that can shapeshift would be used as more of like a spy type thing, like...
Well, yeah, like when he poses as a floor, that's the only time that they really go out of the box thinking of what they could do with him. right? Like they do make sure that in one of the exposition dumps that they lay down all the rules of the T-1000, right? Like he can't be complex machinery, even though technically isn't he complex machinery, but whatever. He can't be a bomb. He can't be chemicals. He has to be something of equal size. So he can't just be a mouse, you know, like, so, but the only time that they go beyond that is with the floor. It's like, well, maybe he should turn himself into a sofa once.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or what if he turned himself into John's dirt bike?
That's right. Like... yeah. Vren, 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 na, 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 vren, na, 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 na. I'm your bike.
Or why couldn't he have ever just turned into, like, Arnold, and we could have got the whole, like, standoff, like... you know, like Wolverine, like the Wolverine Mystique thing at the end of X-Men.
Yeah. No, shoot him. Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't even understand why he decides. Why is Robert Patrick the default setting?
Yeah, I didn't get that. I mean, the only thing I could think of is because it's like they wanted to have an actor play that role, but it seems like... Why didn't he impersonate the cop?
Yeah, but why wouldn't the cop that finds him at the beginning be Robert Patrick then? He impersonates the cop, except for the fact that they would have wanted to keep the mystery alive of the fact that he can shapeshift just a little bit longer, you know? But still, you know?
Yeah.
Or have him as Robert Patrick, and then he comes back, oh, there was no one there, keep the mystery going a bit even harder for the audience? I don't know.
Yeah.
He's very charismatic in this movie. And I mean, I was reading stuff about the fact that he went on like a major like running training regiment when he was getting ready for this movie because he wanted to be able to run without having his mouth open. And he was actually fast enough to catch up to the motorbike.
Wow.
Yeah.
I never even thought about that.
Yeah.
Next time I watch this movie, I'm going to be like, look at that guy.
Yeah.
Mouth closed. That's so hard.
Yeah. Yeah. And he duplicated head movements of a bald eagle and he's purposely moving like a shark through the crowds. Like he's like Robert Patrick is very impressive in this movie. When you realize some of the work that he's put in, when you look at it and go, holy shit, that is what he's doing. Like,
that's so funny. Yeah. I'm reading the like Konstantin Stanislavski book right now, An Actor Prepares, and I was just reading a chapter the other day about the art of experience. He calls it the art of experiencing, and I was like, and it's all about this, like, how are you going to experience the character as you perform it and stuff, and that's really cool. That he did all that stuff and thought like to that in depth about like, you know, what specific type of movement can I use? And like, and also like specifically like predatory, like, like I'm using the movements of like apex predators because that's what this machine is.
Yeah, very much so. So yeah, then we end up getting a part of the film that was actually something that was supposed to be part of the 1984 film. I mean, you also may remember that back when we had that discussion, the original idea was to have a shape-shifting robot sent back as well. And thankfully, they saved it for 1991 special effects. Who would have thought that I would have said thank you for 1991 special effects? But yeah, the other thing that was originally going to be part of the first movie was the idea of taking down Skynet. And James Cameron says, thank God we didn't actually do that because now we have this major moment for the second one. And that's something that I definitely appreciate in this one. When you compare it to the first one, there is that horror quality where it's just the stalking predator the whole time. Whereas this, it's like, okay, no, we're going to have a side quest.
Yeah, like there's an actual mission
for
our characters to go on.
We can stop this. Yeah, there's no fate but what you make or whatever that fucking stupid-ass poem that John has to recite is. I've never liked that. Oh, I forgot to mention, that was something else I was going to say about Edward Furlong having his growth spurt during this movie, there is actually one scene that was filmed where he's standing in a hole so that his height is still the same compared to what it used to be. Because he's standing next to Sarah Connor at that point, yeah, and he was too tall at that point. So they're like, no, stand in this pothole. Stand in this ditch, Edward.
Yeah. Do you ever find it a little inconsistent with the T-800's ability to, I don't know, almost empathize at times? Like, to be semi-human?
I did read at some point that Arnold Schwarzenegger was having trouble. It took him a while to figure out how to build the character, and then unfortunately some stuff that was off had already been filmed. So there is an inconsistency to how the character grows and develops. Now, I mean, I've always had a lot of questions about the Terminators themselves. I mean, yes, you think he would be better at duplicating humans right from the get-go, because that's what they're designed to do. But I've also always wondered, how come they never have a picture of him? How come they don't know what he looks like automatically? You know, the T-1000 needs to borrow a photograph from the foster parents. Are there really no records from John from this time?
Yeah.
Or is it like, oh shit, I forgot it back home. I meant to grab that before I left the house. Fuck.
It's kind of funny, like, because you would think, I guess, like, the world that they're coming from, like, everything has been completely destroyed, but you think there'd be a knowledge record. Like, if I was dressed as a police officer and I wanted to know what somebody looked like, the first place I'd probably go is a school, because guaranteed there's, like, class photos somewhere.
Yeah.
But it is strange that they don't know what he... They don't really know who they're exactly looking for when they get there.
Yeah. Unless that's all part of the ruse to make sure that it's like, no, I'm a cop. I'm checking up on your son. You know, do you have a photo?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, because that's the thing about Robert Patrick in this role, is he really puts on the charm when he needs to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that scene with the foster parents, he's very charming.
Yeah. We don't get the same thing, like, in the first one. They could have gone the route of him, like, just looking for all the John Connors in the
phone book, like, and yeah,
phone book, and killing them all.
Yeah, yeah.
But I guess they would have an approximate age at this point, so that makes sense.
It is nice though also to see, like, the evolution of technology in 7 years. Unlike the first one, where they just go to a phone book, it's like, oh no, this one we're checking a computer. We have a database we can go to.
Computer?
A computer. A portable computer. The scene where they go see Dyson at the house, now that we've got the Skynet plot involved. It was...
Oh, wait, is her twin the one that's in the park? Or is that a split cut? Like, they filmed her doing one thing and filmed Hamilton the other thing.
Her twin is like when they fight in the steel mill.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, when she tricks John into coming back, or when the Terminator tricks John into coming back. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, those moments are her twin. Yeah. No, in the park also, the child that she's playing with, the baby John Connor, is actually Linda Hamilton's real son.
Oh.
Yeah. Her real 18-month-old son is the young John Connor in that movie. So, other little
Miles fact. Dyson got it bad in this movie. I'm just going to say he got screwed.
He did, yeah.
Like, he survives Sarah's attack just to get killed by the police. I thought, I don't know. Rings a little odd in our current times.
I guess it does. Sure does.
Being the only like African person in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, his family survived, so there were two others. Yeah. I did really like the acting from Linda Hamilton in this movie, with having to play the badass chick, but also like having to play this tormented soul when she can't actually pull the trigger on Miles Dyson.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, holy shit, there is a lot going on in this movie that some people may not give it credit for being a Terminator movie.
Yeah, I like her so much better in this movie than the first one. Like, but at the same time, it's like, you need who she was in the first one to appreciate the character development. But yeah, I thought I feel like she's kind of an underrated talent.
Yeah. And that was one of her requirements for coming back. She's like, I'll only come back if I'm not just a fucking waitress again. Like, you know, I want to be crazy. And yeah, the Doomsday Prepper. I mean, when they get out to that middle of nowhere to realize that, oh, Sarah has collected all these guns. Like, how long has she been in the mental institute? I figured they were talking about she's been in there, like, pretty much since the first movie. You know, she did her little escape ending to Mexico or whatever, but I figured she had been in there for a while.
I got the sense that she had been there for, like, maybe 6 months to a year. Okay. Because John makes mention of, like, how she had, like, other boyfriends and stuff that always got scared off. Like, so he was old enough to be, like, conscious enough to understand what she... And he mentions, like, oh, like, I just thought everybody lived like this and that kind of stuff. I didn't know until I went to my foster parents and stuff, but...
Okay, so then my big question then, maybe I've never really thought of this, but who committed her then?
I think...
They just finally caught up with her from...
I think if I remember right, I feel like they mentioned her, like, she tried to pull off some sort of, like, attack, or maybe she got in a fight with one of the boyfriends. I can't remember.
She resurfaced, basically. She was hidden, but she ended up resurfacing for some reason.
Yeah, like, I feel like, from what I remember, is, like, she tried to... Not do, like, what they end up doing in this movie, but maybe she had, like, some other information that she was trying to act upon that ended up getting her found out.
Yeah. You know, I've jumped ahead to the Skynet thing. You know, I really didn't pay enough, give enough praise to the whole escape from the asylum scene. I kind of jumped right over that. But from the moment when she gets the paperclip, like, it is such a well-executed scene all the way through. Like, from the moment that she, like, picks the lock and gets out of there and beats the guy up and she hides the pole and, you know, she upgrades her weapon too. But that moment when she comes around the corner as well and the Terminator comes out of the elevator, all of that moment I thought was also... beautifully shot. I didn't mean to jump over it, but her escape from the asylum is amazing.
No, I agree.
Yeah.
Especially when that guy gets his comeuppance.
Especially when he gets his comeuppance, yeah.
The licker, as we'll call him.
Yeah. Like, just the you know, the Roto-Rooter and the knack and the... Sarah is a badass. That's all there is to it. I mean, you know, no matter what, like... With this movie, this is still just a near perfect movie. I mean, that's the thing. It's one that I almost struggle to talk about because it's just like, I love this, I love this, I love this.
Yeah, if only we would have had somebody here to like really look at it with fresh eyes.
bounce fresh eyes off.
Anyhow.
It's almost like my strategy for this episode was completely centered around the fact that I had someone with fresh eyes. So that sounds like a cue to me. Hi, it's Sean from the future coming to you. Now, when Colin and I originally did this episode... we wanted to have our buddy Jack on the show because he had already been through 3 Die Hard movies with us and the first Terminator. We were starting him in on the Terminator franchise. He was unable to make it at the time of the recording, but I decided we needed to have our buddy and we needed to do Jack's thoughts. So here we go. Please welcome to the show, Mr. Jack Bazook.
Hello. How are you doing, sir?
Jack, I knew we couldn't do this episode without having you in here in the show proper. So, you have now watched Terminator 2, but before now, you had never seen Terminator 2, correct?
That is correct. I have never seen Terminator 2.
Nice. Okay, now, so my first question for you after recording the episode with Colin was, did we ruin it for you in our discussion with Terminator 1? Did we give away too much, or had you nicely forgotten about everything we had discussed regarding the future movie?
I don't think you guys ruined it for me. I mean,
Okay.
like, I had had some thoughts and ideas about what the Terminator franchise was like because, I mean, I've been to Universal, I've been on the Terminator ride, even
Okay.
though I had never seen any of the movies. So I had some weird ideas of what Terminator was like. I had totally forgotten what we specifically talked about, but, in my head, we talked about it during the first movie. I was like, I thought the Terminator was a good guy, and then it turns out he
Okay.
wasn't in the first movie, right? And so
Right.
we even said, oh wait, that's Terminator 2. And so then
Yes.
now when I watch this one, I was like, oh, okay, there it is. Here's like the good guy. I mean, no spoilers because we've all seen the movie now. Like at the
Yep.
very end, they get the thumbs up as he goes down. Like that's a big iconic. That's in lots of Easter eggs and video games and stuff, right? The final thumbs up. And so I had had like weird sort of like thoughts and things, and I had even watched like a YouTube video from visual effects coordinators talking about the visual effects from Terminator 2 and the phasing through the steel bars
Oh,
scene.
right. Yes. Okay.
Yeah, so I had weird like prior knowledge to this movie, but I never had the context of actually watching the movie.
Okay. Because one realization that I had with this movie is that the reveal of Arnold Schwarzenegger being the good guy was probably meant to be like a Luke, I am your father type moment in this franchise.
Yeah, I think you're right because the way it happens, like they get into that corridor. I actually had totally forgotten all about it, and so in my head after, because only watching Terminator 1, I was like, okay, Arnold's the bad guy,
Right,
and so
right.
then when it actually did kind of happen to me,
So
the
we tricked you
moment.
back into
Yes,
thinking that,
because the moment,
okay.
yeah, they're in the hallway, he goes duck. I was like, wait, and then I was like, oh, right, he's the good guy.
Right, get down, right. Yeah, because I realized that, hey, they are discreetly hiding how the bad Terminator is coming into the picture because they don't show the death of the cop.
No.
And they show both of them looking for John Connor, but the demeanor of Robert Patrick as the T-1000 is so much different when he goes to the houses. Whereas in the first Terminator, you had Arnold Schwarzenegger going through the magic phone book and just finding everybody
Right,
named
right.
Sarah
Yeah.
Connor. Yeah.
It was almost like yeah, like up until yeah, like up until that point, I was like, oh, okay, here's the good guy. He's this police officer guy. You know who he reminds me of, which is so weird, is oh, it's gonna I have to look. I'll find it and I'll tell you in a second. But that actor with his hair up like that reminds me of a character from Hairspray.
Hairspray, okay.
Yes,
Is
the
Zac Efron? No,
no,
no.
John Travolta's husband, which is.
Oh, that.
Does it not? I'm gonna find it because it's
Yeah,
gonna
I
bug
don't
me.
remember Hairspray well enough. I remember Good Morning Baltimore, but.
That's I love that one. No, sorry, it was a total weird. I was like, it's been killing me this whole time
Yeah.
that he looks like
Oh, it's Christopher Walken,
Christopher
isn't it?
Walken.
Yeah.
Yes, it's Christopher Walken. It
Yeah.
reminds me of Christopher Walken. Just the
Okay.
haircut, I think. But I was like, I kept thinking like he's gonna
That's
say something Christopher Walken, and I was
a
like, what is
weird
going on?
pull. And that's a weird choice to be like Christopher Walken, the guy from Hairspray.
See, now you know what I like know from movies, right?
I
It's
suppose
my
so.
background of
I
theater
suppose
people.
so. Okay, so back to Jack's thoughts on the movie. So, what did you think?
I think I liked the first one more, honestly.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, you like the horror vibe.
Yeah, I liked it. The grittier, the running around, the bit more of a fear. And I don't know. It seemed like, I don't want to say, because I liked John Connor. Like, I liked the kid.
Okay. Now, he was supposed to be 11. Did you pick that up?
Oh, no. I thought 13. Okay. 13, 14. I thought he was a little older than, because 11 to me is really little.
Yeah. This was his debut movie. So, I mean, you know, Furlong had some growing to do. He didn't continue on as John Connor as the franchise went on because he had a bit of a drug problem that he come to. Yeah, so
that happens to child actors. I can see that.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay, so you kind of like the kid.
I kind of liked the kid. I did not really like this version of Sarah Connor.
Really?
But
you like damsel in distress Sarah Connor over badass Sarah Connor.
It almost seemed like she wasn't really badass. She was just sort of like mentally ill and just like not coping with her life. And I mean, it doesn't help that she got put in that institution and got dealt with, had to deal with whatever happened in there. And so it sort of seemed like.
But she's not mentally ill. Everyone thinks she is, but she isn't.
And so she's been subject to all of this, you know, crap in that institution, and it definitely affected her. Like, she just got, I don't know, the way she went after the doctor.
Yeah.
Like, by herself. Like, it just seemed like, I don't know, like such a big character shift. But I guess it makes sense, because when you think about what's happened in her life is that, you know, she was attacked, and then they took away all the stuff, there was no evidence, and then they institutionalized her because nobody believed her. Yeah. And, like, I guess it does make sense that there was this massive shift in personality and drive, right? Because what drives her in this movie
has to do
is so much different. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I guess I was sort of thinking of it as, like, not victim, but something along those lines where, like, it also might just have been her portrayal of that I didn't care for. I don't know.
You didn't like dark, brooding Sarah Connor. That's an interesting take. I mean, it's the growth of Sarah Connor that's the whole reason she came back for the movie, is because she said, no, I want my character to grow if I come back.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, I totally see the growth. I see the growth. I see the character shift. I just don't think I liked it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Special effects. 1991 special effects. What did you think of our liquid metal Terminator, given the movies of today and what you see today? They still hold up pretty good. Do you have any particular favorite moment with the liquid metal Terminator?
I like all of the times when he either phases through something or gets something pulled out of him. I also like, I enjoy like the, when he's like the bullets happen, right? There's the impact crater, and then the crater, you know, sucks back into form.
Yeah.
I thought that was really neat. And also anytime he does like a fast blade, like, so the foster dad, when he gets killed, that was pretty sick.
Yeah.
Like, he's on the phone and then all of a sudden his arm shoots out and then it like pans over to like blade through the back of the skull. Like, that was sick.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. Right on. And what would you say? I mean, you know, we have to make it clear that you literally just watched this movie. Like, so you're still even just putting your thoughts together.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have a favorite, like, action sequence or chase scene or anything like that?
Oh, I liked the first bike sequence when he still didn't know that the Terminator was helping him. He's running away on his little like red bike, and then the Terminator pulls up next to him and just like plucks him off of his bike and onto the other bike. Yeah. That one was cool. I like that scene. Yeah, the semi chase.
T-1000 always going for semis.
Yeah, he seems to have apparently fondness. The semis, yeah, fondness for semis, and the semis are very durable.
Yes, yes.
Like,
just rip that roof right off it. That was actually something that they realized on the day of filming that it was not going to fit underneath the overpass. So they said, okay, well, let's just cut it off.
Oh, that's so cool. I didn't know that. That's super cool. I also enjoyed the special effects at the beginning, like the that whole sequence, right? Because when you compare it to the first movie, it kind of looks a little clunky.
Mm-hmm.
And then this one, it was like much smoother, like the way the like
the ball.
Blasters. Yeah.
Oh, sorry, the future stuff, yes.
Yeah, the future stuff, the very beginning.
I was thinking the time travel ball, the way it melts, like, the corner of the semi.
Yeah. And, like, his little crater and stuff. That was super cool.
No, but,
and
yes, the future scenes were definitely much more slick in this.
I believe the lasers were actually lasers, right? Like, the laser bullets.
It
felt a little more real. And I also enjoyed the atomic bomb dream. That was kind of cool.
Yes.
Because, like, the way the world, like, you know, crumbled and, like, the building fell over and, like, you know, that was a cool sequence. I like that.
Yeah. Very cool. Very cool sequence. Yeah. And still one of those sequences that's still very hailed in the special effects community.
Totally. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. I don't know. Okay. So, Jack, final thoughts. Yeah. So, yeah. Bring me home. I mean, I just wanted you in just to make sure we got your voice, because this was a journey we had you on. We wanted to make sure that we finished you on Terminator. From here, you know, proceed at your own risk. Some of them are good, you know, but yeah, I wanted to make sure we got your voice on Terminator 2, because it was a promise from a long time ago that we've, anyone that's been following our journey with you. So... Final thoughts on Terminator 2. What did you think of Terminator 2 overall? I mean, you already mentioned you think you might have liked the first one more.
I'm really happy I watched it, because without our journey, without being on here, it's probably something I never would have watched just on my own. Yeah. And I would have missed out. I would have missed out on like the hasta la vista. Baby,
yeah, did right? You like the humor of it?
It was fun. It was fun. His little, like the little, like the hand, like high five little sequence was really cute. Like I did enjoy the little bits of humor, because they added the kid element, right? And the finding out ways to be more human, which was really neat. Yeah, and like even the final sequence, like I know the reason why you cry now.
Yeah,
right. And like you can tell that the Terminator, even though he's a machine, has had some growth, and like he's sad that he has to end, like, you know, not continue on and jump into the fire pit. But I really enjoyed it. It was a fun movie. I can see why it did so well. Like, and I can see why people really love it. And it's just, it fills out my, like, I don't want to say historical, because it seems like, oh my goodness, but like,
why not?
Yeah, right. Like, it historical is, movie, know,
30 years old.
Yeah, like it just went. Like, there are lots of current things that reference Terminator 2.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
and now I'm definitely getting all those references. Before, I might have been like, "Oh yeah, okay, haha, I've seen that somewhere." But now I know that's where it's from, and that makes me really happy.
If you see someone explode in a movie and then melt and come back together, you're like, ah, right.
Exactly.
Terminator 2. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, I mean, hey, I'm glad to have brought you on this journey. Do you remember from our discussion in the first one that this was originally the idea for Terminator 1 was to have two Terminators, one of them a shape-shifting robot?
Real? No, I didn't know that.
Okay. Now, one other thing to blow your mind hole that I want to capture a reaction of you from on here. One of the ideas was for Kyle Reese, like for the other Terminator to be played by Michael Biehn and to look like Kyle Reese. How would you have felt about that? Would you have found that too confusing if instead of Robert Patrick, we had Michael Biehn playing the Terminator?
Oh,
and not being human, being an actual, you know, being a robot that just happens to look like him.
No, that would have been way too confusing.
Yeah. Okay.
Because the he was like the guy in the first one, you can't have And isn't he John's dad? Isn't that the whole
yeah,
thing?
Yeah, yeah, it absolutely is.
So, like, you can't have John... Hold on. So then it would have been John sends his father back in time to become his father, right?
Yeah.
And then later in John's life, right, like, as a child, his father shows up again
but
as
a
Terminator.
Robot.
But it's a robot.
Yeah.
That. Oh, my goodness. I don't know, man. I feel like that would have gotten so confusing for continuity and, like, understanding what's going on and, like, who the characters are.
Yeah.
Did
you buy Robert Patrick, like, the T-1000 as an evil robot? Like, did you
once
find
it
him
was
menacing?
Established, once it was established that he was the bad guy, a little mm-hmm. bit, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, there were a couple times where he was pretty cold-blooded. The one where when he's in the mental hospital and he is the floor... And then he comes up through the floor and just like stabs that guy. Yeah, that one, I was like, okay, super bad guy.
Yeah. He did a bunch of major running as well. Like,
he
trained as a mm-hmm. runner so that he would be able to run without having to breathe through his mouth for those long sprinting sections.
So that he could keep the face the same. That's so crazy.
And he was actually able to catch John Connor on his motorbike a couple times.
Oh, that's kind of cool, too. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
Ah, wow.
A lot going on. Yeah.
Totally a lot going on. I love it. I love it.
Right on. Good movie. Jack, thank you for showing up to chat a little bit about this movie with you. If people want to find you out in the world, I mean, you know, if you want to drop handles on us, you have in the past.
Well, I mean, sure, I'll go for it. My Instagram is Jack_Bazook. And that's pretty much all I've got out there right now. I'm not doing too much. I'm just doing cheerleading and in college. So,
nice. Right on. Thanks for joining us, Jack. And now, back to the rest of the show.
Anyways, the third act or whatever of this movie, like the big battle at Skynet is...
Yeah. With Dyson sacrificing himself, of course.
And we get Arnold with the massive like Gatling gun, machine gun that somehow he manages zero human casualties. this whole other thing about like the T8, like John making the T-800 promise to not kill anybody, is also, I don't know. It just seems not. Not thought out.
Well, one
like,
thing,
you need them to kill some people.
Yeah. I mean, one thing I love about this movie is the fact that they injected a little humor into it. You know, with John, basically, it's like he's got a pet Terminator. You know, his Terminator is, it's like a dog that knows how to talk. You know, mm-hmm. Oh, look what I can get him to do. And I definitely like that, where that's something that kind of elevates this above the first movie for me, is it takes it from just being a horror to, okay, at least we can have a fun moment here or there. Break a little tension.
Oh, sad news. Linda Hamilton's twin sister died.
Oh.
In 2020.
Oh. R.I.P. Leslie Hamilton.
I also didn't realize that Linda Hamilton was married to James Cameron.
Is she still? I don't think she is still.
No, not anymore.
Yeah.
They're divorced.
Yeah.
She got $50 million. Huh. Not too bad.
Not too bad. I'd marry James Cameron for a little while if I knew there was $50 million at the end of it.
I mean, if you're divorcing James Cameron now, I feel like you're probably getting, you know.
Oh, you've got Avatar money now.
Yeah, you're getting like you get 200 mil easy.
you got Avatar money, you got Submarine money, you got Titanic money. Yeah, you're doing okay. The whole end scene, though, yes, you mentioned it. It starts at the Cyberdyne with the shootout at Cyberdyne. But yeah, then we get into the helicopter chase, and we end up with like the truck crashing into the steel mill. And the scene that is still very cool... And I finally read something about how they did this. This was something that I've never known how they did. Or maybe I forgot how they did. When he's breaking apart, when the T-1000 is frozen and breaking apart, they've got a series of holes that he's stepping into so that to disguise that his leg isn't there and everything like that. And I guess there was like an amputee stunt guy that they got, or like body double that they got as well for some of the moments as well, but cleverly edited to make it all look like one more or less continuous shot. I'm like, huh, wow. Now I need to find some behind-the-scenes thing of how this was actually done. I want to see this in action. Fucking James Cameron.
Like, I don't know. I'm sure it's included on there, but I stumbled across a there's like a like hour and a half YouTube video that was all like behind-the-scenes stuff. I'm assuming it's just kind of the whatever DVD special features they were
put
on YouTube. But
yeah,
that scene kind of made me wonder. I mean, it's one of those things, we can't go into the weeds, but like when it comes to the T-1000, I wondered, like, say they had gone and picked up all the pieces and spread them apart, like would they all have found
put them each all other in separate jars or something?
Or like how does that work? Like could the T-1000 have theoretically become two smaller killing machines? Yeah. Like,
well, yeah, like there is the one like shootout scene where, you know, they're driving out of the parkade and he goes sprinting after them down the road and he ends up hooking into their trunk and he leaves that little bit behind. What would have been what would have happened if John hadn't pulled that out of the hood? Would he have been able to track that? Or would it have been able to turn into its own creature? Like, did he have to reabsorb it? Like, what would have happened if he hadn't found that piece again?
Yeah. I don't know, maybe it would have been like Monsters, Inc. You know, it wouldn't have been able to work. You need every piece of the door.
That's right. You need that last sliver. Yeah. Yeah, and then we get the big final siege in the molten steel plant. I've never quite understood when they actually finally get him knocked off the ledge into the steel. Why does he, like, take so long to freak out?
I know. I thought about that, too. It reminded me of, like, I don't know. I was thinking maybe it was Mortal Kombat, but it reminded me of, like, some sort of other movie where it's, like, a shapeshifter or somebody who, like, steals people's souls. And, like, as they die, you see them turn into all the people they've inhabited or whatever.
Yeah.
But I was like, this is a robot. Like, he would just melt. He has no emotion.
Yeah.
No, like, feel like he's not feeling anything, as far as I can think. I don't know. It's strange.
Yeah, I've always found it strange. Apparently, the screams were done by James Cameron, and I mean, don't get me wrong, it's kind of cool, but it's never made any sense to me. If there's one problem I have with Terminator 2, yeah, that part's just never made sense to me. I guess the scene where he pulls the bar out of himself, that was filmed on Christmas Day. Fun little trivia fact.
Nice.
Yeah.
I do find, like, the one thing that's weird is, like, the T-800 is just so obviously an inferior model of Terminator because, like, he just gets his ass kicked by T-1000, and in Terminator 3...
Handed to him.
He just gets his ass kicked by the TX. Like,
absolutely handed to him. But he never gives up, though.
Yeah,
he's plucky.
He's got heart. Kid's got heart.
that plucky T-800 just keeps going. Yeah. Just rips his arm off and keeps going. Gives you a thumbs up with his good arm. Like the moment where show him. Okay, fine. I'll cut off my arm. That's how I'll show you. And still, it's, you know, the realization on Dyson's face still seems to take a while. Mm-hmm. Even when he's flashing the hand, it's like, wait a minute, where have I seen that before? Is almost what it looks like. It's like, no, like your reaction should be a little bit more instantaneous than that. Yeah. I guess they added the line about I cannot self-terminate because test audiences were confused about why he didn't just jump.
Well,
You know, I have to say, actually, if there is one thing about Terminator that maybe I'm not the hugest fan of, is actually, like, the monologuing from Sarah. Because it's inconsistent. Right? She talks about the dark hallway at the the dark highway at the very end of the movie and all that sort of thing. But, like, where it's used throughout the movie is just some odd times, I find. Just all of a sudden, oh, she's doing another diary entry or something.
Mm-hmm.
Dear Diary, Sarah again. Oh, you'll never believe what happened today.
Did you watch the alternate ending?
No, I've watched this on Netflix. I
watched it on Netflix too, but I was Googling stuff on YouTube.
Okay.
And they have the alternate ending on there, and I kind of like the alternate ending is like a definitive ending, like we won. Old Sarah, and it has like John there, like pushing his daughter on the swing, and it's like, you know, it all worked out, everything. We did it, we won. And yeah. Part of me was like, you know, I kind of like that. Knowing like how things went with the sequels that came after, I was like, I kind of like the finality of the alternate ending of and just like the happiness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. I mean, Salvation was cool. I will say Terminator Salvation was pretty cool, but yeah, everything that came in between, you're right. The franchise lost its way for a while there.
Yeah. I mean, I've liked almost all of them, but it's just they're so disjointed. It's kind of like like we talked about, but it is kind of like the X-Men movies as well. It's like at some point somebody just decided, "Hey, we don't care about continuity anymore." It's all timey-wimey stuff. We'll figure it out in the wash.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's all Eddie Furlong's fault.
Yeah, that is true. We have discovered that.
Yeah. Yeah, everything that went wrong with the Terminator franchise, Edward Furlong's fault. Christian Bale having a meltdown on set, Eddie Furlong's
Eddie
fault.
Eddie Furlong's fault.
Right there. Well, there we go. That is Terminator 2 Judgment Day. Oh, boy. Now, Colin, on IMDb, it's scored 8.6 out of 10 and has a Metascore of 75. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 92% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 95%. But, Colin, those are just numbers. Like a Terminator, like a T-800 getting smashed in the face with a giant steel girder. Hit us with some reviews.
All right. I mean, it was pretty hard to find good reviews because I don't think there's a single person who has anything bad to say about this movie.
Yeah, I don't think I do.
If I could summarize Rotten Tomatoes and Google reviews, basically the consensus is that this is the greatest sequel ever made, the greatest action movie ever made, and quite possibly the greatest movie ever made. So, Sarah J gives the movie 5 out of 5 stars and says, "My favorite film of all time. Superb. Amazing storyline, great acting and effects. Heartbreaking ending, on par with Marley and Me. Must watch."
On par with Marley and Me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I did compare him to a pet dog at one point, so...
Jacob H. says 5 out of 5 stars, arguably one of the greatest sequels ever. James Cameron presented Terminator 2 Judgment Day in 1991, and I believe that remains his most ambitious, possibly best film still to date. Creating one of the more vivid sci-fi experiences with no space required, the audience is treated to impressive uses of CGI and practical effects around characters with depth and a thoughtful premise. T2 represents a landmark in cinematic history where the limits were pushed in order to create what many regard as one of the great pieces of filmmaking.
You know, it's just, it's too bad that, like, he is allegedly such a dick because, my God, does James Cameron do some impressive stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, you can't sing enough praises for him, but, yeah.
He's good at the movies.
Supposedly not the nicest guy. Yeah.
This last one is from Nick S. He says 5 out of 5 stars. "I first saw this film when I was 4 years old in 1994. I was obsessed with this movie. Every day after school throughout the decade that followed, I watched that movie 2 to 3 times a day. I know for a fact I've seen this film more than 1,000 times. I just couldn't get enough of it. It's my favorite film of all time. It resonated with me so intensely. It had everything 90s and the most incredible chase scene to the best practical effects. This film will always hold a special place in my life. I will never get tired of it, ever. What a masterpiece, and the fact that it still holds up after 30 years shows it's a timeless film. Not to mention the brilliant music by Brad Fidel. I give this film 100% score. Yeah, that's pretty much every review.
Yeah.
Like, I'm pretty... what do you say? It's like 92 critics, 95 audience? Or vice versa?
Yeah, from Rotten Tomatoes, yeah. And 8.675 on IMDb. So, IMDb not rating it as high, but, I mean, still... Anytime you get a movie over 90%, yeah, you're going to hear mostly best movie ever.
Mm-hmm.
I know IMDb prompted me to rate when I was looking something up earlier, and yeah, I gave it a 9 out of 10. So, yeah, I don't know what else I can say about Terminator 2. I mean, I appreciate the cutting-edge special effects, even if they don't 100% hold up to some of the things that I've seen currently. But my God, for a movie that's more than 30 years old, they are still impressive as hell. Better than any special effects I could do. Well acted. I mean, I was more impressed by the acting and the mystery involved, just because I was watching it with a different viewpoint on this viewing. I still love it. It's still a well-crafted movie, and James Cameron knocked another one out of the park. I think that kid's got a bright future ahead of him.
Yeah, he'll be okay. You
know? I don't know. I don't know what else to say about Terminator 2 from my perspective. I still love it. That's all I can say. It's greatest movie of all time, blah, blah, blah. No, mm-hmm. I still love it. Still love it. Still a great movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I think... I can't say that I've watched this movie a lot. So, I feel like I was still kind of, like, not sure how I felt about it going into this watch. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was great. I thought it's like an incredible action movie. The chase scene at the beginning and the whole standoff and chase scene at the end are amazing, like, mm-hmm. action set pieces. The, like, Linda Hamilton turns an amazing performance. Even Arnold, like, being a robot, like, him, like, I was surprised at how good the relationship with him and John reads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because... it doesn't really come across that well in, like, other movies, like, I think Dark Fate is a close second to this one in terms of, like, the Arnold's emotional resonance as the Terminator.
Yeah. Yeah. Old man, but yeah, Terminator.
It's impossible to say anything bad about this movie. I would challenge somebody to hate this movie. I don't think you can.
Yeah. That's right. Write to us and tell us why
we
should hate Terminator. Yeah. And then we will hit the delete button on that because you are wrong.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. That is Terminator 2 Judgment Day. And that's our show for the week. Oh, boy. If you like our show, well, just do all those things that help us out, like and subscribe. See, look down at your phone right now. Right now you're listening on your phone or the device that you're listening on. See the little subscribe button? It's right there. All you have to do is click it. And hey, see right there where you can leave a review? Yeah, you can click on that and go give us 5 stars. You know, just help drive us up the charts. Help us get noticed. Or if you want to go above and beyond, this one takes a little bit more work, but go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne, become a patron of the show, and you become an executive producer of the show, which means you get a shout out, just like executive producer Joshua Blum of the 13th Hour Podcast.
And be sure to check out our website, iusedtolikethisone.com, where you can find links to all our podcast episodes and social media pages. Drop us a line at iusedtolikethisone@gmail.com and let us know what movies you used to like, and then maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show.
I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells. Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter and the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. And if you want to hear more from me and my stories of being a bus driver, check out my other podcast, In Front of the Yellow Line, anywhere pods are cast. Thank you for listening. And join us next time when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One. Boom. There we go.
Awesome. That was great.
Jack, thanks so much.